So I'm hitting the record button right now. So I am Gabriella Frank, and I am here on behalf of Seattle Arts and Lectures with John McCartney, a wits teacher at Hamilton International Middle School, and poet and wits writer in residence, Ariane True. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So the first question, I have heard that the two of you have the word magical came into context about your collaboration. So for the benefit of the SAL audience, tell us how you met through Writers in the Schools and how your professional relationship has blossomed into a collaboration.
Great, you want to start? Go ahead.
Yeah, so last year, that was 2019, I got out of the blue asked to suddenly take over John's residency.
Oh my gosh.
Which was very exciting. And we didn't get to have our, like, did we? We got to have a meeting before because you gave me the dance handout.
Yeah, I think we met briefly.
Like
very briefly, but most of it was just coordinated through emails with Alicia between the two of us at first. You know, in my memory, I think the thing that really clinched it was that first day, and you started explaining some of your classroom expectation things to the students, and one of our students raised her hand and was like, "Are you Mr. McCartney's sister or something?" So we had very, very natural similarities in terms of just how we approach interacting with students and what we want to see a classroom be like just from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember being really excited and, like, really taken aback by that. I love all the teachers I've worked with. It's been awesome. But it is also rare because I've used to do contract work with a lot of schools and other places and had a lot of trouble with some of my teachers there because of the way they treated their students. And seeing someone else treating their students the way I want to treat my students made me feel like, oh, like I don't have to worry about this. Like, we can just get to work here. And that John was so excited about doing dancing and poetry with the students was also like, oh, okay, so we can really take off.
Like, we can go there. So, and these are, so middle school is like 11, 12, 13 year old?
Yeah, my classroom is 11 and 12 year olds. They're a sixth grade class.
Okay, great. And so actually maybe compare and contrast other classroom situations, like when a wits resident comes in, like what have students been learning to that point and what changes with a wits writer in residence?
I think that can look really different, of course, depending on the classroom and the arrangement of the school year. We're usually coming off of a fiction unit in my class when we start wits residencies in the spring and in order to work on poetry. And so we've just been learning, you know, a lot of fiction writing based stuff and how to analyze fiction based stuff. And so we kind of freshly move into poetry after that point.
Sort of like a breath of fresh air after, like, are they reading, and I should know this because obviously I went through school, but are they reading novels at this point, or is it mostly short fiction and then into poetry?
Again, something that's pretty dependent on where you are. We read a lot of short fiction, and we read The House on Mango Street.
Oh, nice.
At our school, yeah.
That's great. And then poetry, I mean, how do you prepare them for that?
Well,
I thought you did a really good job this year.
Oh, thanks. This year, and we tried out a lot of new things this year, honestly. I just wanted to make sure we had a lot of common language around things like stanza and line. I coordinated with Ari ahead of time to be like, okay, what terms do you really want the students to know? Mm-hmm. Once you come in, I try to give like a range of different kinds of poems from different backgrounds. I had some poetry by Sagyo, the Japanese poet from the 12th century. I had some pieces by Langston Hughes. Just a pretty broad survey.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, I've found
yeah,
even
where did they go from that?
Oh, even though we only had like a few days this year, unfortunately,
right?
Because we got cut off. I did find that it was helpful going in that they already had a good understanding of things like stanza and line, because I forget that if you don't spend time with those, you don't know them.
Right.
And so having those really basic things meant that we could jump in a lot more easily, which was very exciting to me. So we could play more, I guess it feels like.
Yeah. Arianne, how do you find that the students go into kind of poetry in the body? Is that something that you have to coax some of them into, or are they kind of just ready to go there?
I mean, you know, it depends. Everyone's different. Last year, it was really fun seeing which students and how they responded. There was one kid last year who was very small and like fairly quiet, but then on our like dancing day, busted out all these sick moves and was like the energetic center of the room.
Wow.
And was responding to the poetry through that.
Yeah.
So I think people respond differently. Some people kind of struggle to feel it. Some people get it right away. But everyone was willing to try.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, to build off of that, I'd say that, you know, all students have different learning preferences. And I think that, you know, when we're talking about, like, poetry being in the body, I think especially in a language arts class, you don't really think of it being a class that is kinesthetic in any sort of way. And so giving students who might not prefer writing, who might not prefer doing things on paper, this other way to interact with poetry, I think it gives the best chance to get all kids a chance to be engaged and involved.
Yeah, right.
And I love that because I think, you know, writing poetry isn't the only way to interact with it. There are so many ways you can interact with poetry, and like getting kids or anyone to put it into their body and like manifest it that way is so fun. It's so fun to watch. That's one of my favorite days.
Yeah. I feel like students today are so much farther ahead. Like when I was a student, I think what we mainly read was right out of a book and it was somebody else's words. And the likelihood that that person was long dead was pretty high. And I feel like these days they're slam poetry. I love seeing the WITS students at all the events to kick that off. And it feels like there's much more visibility within young writers today that performance and reading and dancing about poetry is actually just part of writing. Do you feel like that's kind of the dialogue that you have with students, like both of you?
I almost take it for granted that it's easier to do those things these days, and that education overall has gotten, you know, I got my criticisms, but it's gotten a lot more progressive about including different kinds of voices.
Absolutely.
With expression. It's like normal to be that way.
Yeah, I agree with John. I sometimes take it for granted until I stop and notice, but like, I went through like, you know, fairly traditional schooling here in Seattle, but outside of that, I had a lot of writing teachers at places like Youth Speaks and the Hugo House.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, I think, until I got to grad school and heard stories from my professors, just how great all of my writing teachers had been and how that wasn't the norm everywhere, especially in formal schools. They just brought in everyone. They brought in every mode. They brought in so much interdisciplinary stuff. Everything was fair game and everything was play and low stakes and fun.
Yeah, amazing. Are you able to continue any of this in the current climate?
That's the question, isn't it?
I mean, we were touching on this. I mean, one of the things that Sal asked me to ask as sort of the next question is what is it like to be a teacher now? And so, yeah, I mean, we can pivot and I'm personally really curious what it's like to teach now.
I think it'd be good to just, and this is probably really nice for Ari and I to do this, like walk back to the day that the announcement came out.
Yeah.
Because for us, I mean, we were in the middle of the residency, in the middle of a lesson.
In the middle of a lesson.
Yeah. And this, you know, voice comes over the intercom in our school that's like, teachers, everyone check your email right now. And
we're like, oh no.
Instantly, in every single classroom, all of the students just charged right up to the computer, and it just absolute chaos reigned.
Yeah.
And you know, we were able to like hit a point of like, okay, now we're just gonna like do some Q&A. We're gonna talk about the continuity that we're gonna try to reach for. I mean, back then we thought that this was going to be a 2-week closure as well. And so the nature, you know, this is like where some hard stuff comes in, but like the nature of saying goodbye at that point, when really it ended up being like kind of a permanent goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of some students, like, you know, they're moving at the end of the year or something like that too.
Yeah.
We didn't know that then. So that, it put us in a really rough spot in terms of being able to easily develop continuity after that point.
Yeah, because John and I had talked, and when that came down the pipe, and we do think that the curriculum we have together is really much better done in person, and that there's so much that comes from that, even like aside from all the other reasons why doing everything digitally and at a distance has things like.
Yeah.
So we were really just hoping we could come as soon as school opened back up, we'd just jump right back in where we left off, finish the residency.
Yeah. I think, you know, when we're talking about having similar priorities and values when it comes to education earlier, I think, like, Ari, I'd say we both look at school as like a community first.
Yeah.
You know, as a place where it's not thinking of it in terms of here's these educators who are these storehouses of knowledge who dole out knowledge to people. It's more that you've got these spaces where children come every day and like they're growing and learning without any input from adults. What our job is to be able to help guide them through their own learning, and to like help address things that would keep them from being able to grow the way that they want to and that they need to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so all of our tools for like taking away so many of those obstacles, like we don't have those things right now.
Right. So are you, John, you were mentioning you're not really reaching all of the students. What are ways that you are reaching out, or you are able to make connections even, you know, under the current circumstances?
So we're talking on, what is this, 24th, 25th? The 24th, and so we just had the school board vote on Monday of this week, where they solidified some of the directives. Schools are giving A's to all high school students right now. They're passing all middle school students. We have like a pass-fail system, but functionally I don't know how you say, well, this student gets a failing grade for not having internet at home.
Yeah.
I don't know why that would be an option even on the table.
Yeah.
And you know, we're all working to create asynchronous models of learning. So the idea isn't like everybody's here together doing the same lesson at the same time. It's more like you prepare a whole set of activities and then the student can contact you when they have that done. We have, you know, semi-regular video chat meetings, but still that question of, what are those times supposed to be for? Knowing that not every family can attend, not every student can attend, it gets really hard to like decide what should go into sessions you have to offer, but you don't have to require.
Right.
There was an NPR article recently that said just about 60% of students overall seem to be showing up at their lessons. I'm at about, on a good day, like half of my students can participate in some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally I've had like, you know, like 20 out of 120 kids. Mm. Respond to something I've tried to put out there. And so again, it doesn't feel fair to lay expectations out.
Right. Yeah. Is this a time in which, I mean, as a writer, I've struggled to you know, it's like I show up and yes, in some ways writing is comforting and, you know, to try to make something coherent is a struggle. But I wonder for the kids, is this something that you two are continuing to collaborate on? Because I could imagine there are certainly some for whom like poetry is really saving their life in a way like that might be, you know, a, like a singular bright spot. Are there ways of getting what the curriculum that you two worked on together, like to get it out to them?
Yeah, we've been talking about that.
Yeah, we've got one lesson because with WITS, all of us WITS teachers are recording lessons so that we can just send people can just access the video if they have internet.
Amazing.
Yeah, and John and I did one of our lessons together because it was a lesson that we really, really wrote together.
Can you describe it?
Like what was it about?
It's the dance lesson, right? So
it's a shortened version of the dance lesson.
It is a much shortened version, and there's lots of different activities in it that we don't do. Although I think you technically could have done all of them in some way. We watched a video of Chance the Rapper, who is not a trained dancer himself, performing one of his songs, and I think that one's really nice because that we use that in the classroom, and you know, seeing somebody who is one, recognizable, and two, not necessarily great at dancing, makes it like a lot safer for a lot of the kids.
And he dances with someone who is a trained dancer and choreographer, and I'm a trained dancer, and John is a fantastic dancer, but does not have classical training.
nice way to put it.
And so I like how that mirrors it.
Yeah.
Of like, you can, whatever level of dance or whatever level of dance training that you have is a great level to start engaging from.
Start with that. Yeah. What have you learned from each other in working together?
Wow. That's a good question.
That is a good question.
I mean, I think we've got this like rich and like ever growing friendship, so it's hard for me to
absolutely.
Like, place this like landmark at one point and be like, okay, what did I learn up to this point? But, I mean, I've definitely become more confident in like where my body fits into poetry. You know, cool. As Aries said, I don't have a trained background. I'm like willing to be up in front of a crowd of students and like just be as weird as possible.
Which is very important, and I love you for that.
Yes. but I think that, you know, it's been more meaningful, like what I can do in those contexts, and just thinking, I don't know, we have lots of conversations about student experiences, about what you bring to art, from like that really kind of far out there philosophical level is like really where a lot of that starts. Mm-hmm. All the way down to the details of like, you know, learning about new poets and being able to go and see poets speak at town hall events together and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it feels less like I have learned new things and more about, yeah, that kind of confidence. And for me, it comes kind of like, okay, all the weird stuff I want to do and like the experiments that I want to do with students are great and welcome and not something that I kind of have to sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, this is what I want to do. This is what I think is going to be great. And for someone else to just jump right on board with that and to be like, yes, and let's add this thing to it. And here I have this perfect video to fold into that lesson, was very, very empowering for me because I like the more experimental stuff and I come from an experiential and facilitative background as an educator. And so that is mostly how I like to teach, kind of what John was saying earlier about how they're having their own processes and we're kind of just helping them through that.
Yeah.
It's really, I think because I don't have training as a classroom teacher, I have often felt like I should defer to my classroom teacher. And I'm like, no, I do know a lot about how these dynamics work. So I know a lot of things that other people don't because I've had a different background as an educator.
Mm-hmm.
And having John reaffirm that and build on that with me has been very like, okay, I do know what I'm doing and what I have to offer is really cool.
Yeah. When you work together, are there certain days, Ariane, that you come into the classroom, or are you there every day?
So our residency has been set up as a two-week intensive, meaning every day for 2 weeks, I'm in all of the language arts classes, sixth grade all day, which is super fun.
I can't imagine the energy.
It's one of my favorite things all year. It's like that and holidays.
Yeah. I mean, what do you see maybe coming down in the future? Like if the stay-at-home order, you know, extends into the fall, you know, are there adaptations that you could imagine happening, you know, from the struggles that are going on right now, that maybe something new or even kind of exciting might come out of this from an educational perspective?
Definitely. Although I do have lots of worries about what that might look like.
Yeah.
You know, one of the most cynical thoughts I had right throughout this, I was like, wow, is this going to be the end of having snow days off? Like, we're never gonna take a snow day off again ever, because the expectation. But you know, that's more of my joke answer. I think that there's a real opportunity right now to notice inherent inequities in the system and to try to address them with policy or something before we get back.
Yeah.
There's a lot of contradiction in school, in that public schooling is supposed to be a resource for all students and for especially students who don't have privileges or advantages at home. And I really, unfortunately, feel that during this crisis, the push into digital learning has been more about how many advantages can we give to the students with means before the kids without privilege can catch up. You know, how much education can we make sure we give to a minority of the population before we offer it to all kids?
And a minority of the population that is already doing a lot more okay.
Precisely. And I think that hasn't been properly addressed. My hope is that we can start addressing it before this all ends, and that would give me like more confidence about how we would move into the next year.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's lots in terms of like asynchronous learning that is really valuable and is some like real best practice things for students. I can really go off on this stuff here. I read this article the other day that talked about this math classroom where the teacher said the students can all work through everything on their own. And, you know, they get to decide when to do the lessons. There's just sort of this end goal of like, you know, all of these different math skills and one big assessment at the end of the year. And the kids have all of this power and agency to approach their learning how they want. And like, okay, this is cool, but there's some piece that's missing. And then you get to the end of the article, and it's like, the teacher says, I also will notice when students are not using time well independently. And I'm always going to sit with those kids every single day to help make sure that they can meet these goals.
Mm.
That part is completely missing right now. But I think a lot more teachers will be excited about the first part, because I think there are a lot of educators out there right now who are like, oh, it's cool. A lot of my kids, like, they're putting the effort in. They're figuring things out on their own.
If they have access.
Right. It's just my concern is it's the ones who are going to need the support, who are going to need the backup, not just, like, technological, but, like, emotional and social.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what does this do to collaboration? I mean, this distance.
A lot of Zoom meetings. Microsoft Teams, really, yeah. in the school district. But
yeah.
So Zoom everywhere else.
Yeah. But for I can imagine for kids, you know, if they're, like any of us who might be accustomed to, you know, seeing people in person, having that classroom, you know, full of those faces that they see every day. And even though You know, maybe there's like a feeling about turning your desks together and working together. Suddenly when that's gone, I can imagine that even the way that they're problem solving or working together, you know, suddenly becomes very different. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm also, I do a few different freelance teaching things. And one of the things I'm doing this spring is I'm with a private school, a local private school. I've been contracted to help teach like a 2 or 3 week course. And that was set before any of this happened, but they switched to online learning because they have that capacity. They have that access. Everyone has technology to go to the school. They have financial aid that helps them get that. Most of the students have internet at home. And so we're thinking a lot about collaboration there, because it was originally supposed to be a highly collaborative class where at the end, like the last day was supposed to be the entire grade does a physical collaboration. And we had to just completely scrap that entire part of the curriculum. Because there was no way to replicate
it.
People don't have materials at, we can't promise that people have the materials at home to make that happen.
Right.
Yeah.
It keeps pointing out over and over again, just like glaring access issues, things that were already happening, but this is like really hold a magnifying glass up.
Mm-hmm. Is there something, and I was saying to John earlier, my husband and I don't have kids, so I feel very distant as to what the world of raising young people is like and what education for young people is like. But is there something that you would want to make the rest of us, maybe who don't know as much firsthand, aware of, like things that we can do to help? I mean, maybe parents have a good idea, but I'll profess my ignorance.
One thing that I have found helpful is thinking about myself as a kid, and specifically thinking about myself as the ages of my students. Or at different points in my schooling, and like, okay, when I was in sixth grade, how would this have affected me? When I was in high school, how would this have affected me?
Yeah.
And just trying to remember and connect with that has been really very good for me and how I want to relate, and just like the permission that I give myself and the permission that I'm willing to give my students. Because like in sixth grade, I would have been like, I am, like, school was my salvation. Like, school was how I got like safe and access and stuff. So like without that, I probably wouldn't have done any school work at home. I probably would have played video games and read fantasy novels until the order was lifted. And like, I, as an adult, I would be okay with a kid doing that. Like, you got to get through however you're going to get through. I want to see you on the other side of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. For my part, I would just say that it's really hard to communicate to so many people the broad range of needs that students have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, we start with like, ooh, do they have a computer or not? And then when we start talking about the circumstances that allow students to learn at home, you know, we zip right to the most extreme example. It's like, well, what, you know, okay, there's some students who definitely can't learn because they might be living in abusive circumstances. But there's, I mean, and that's definitely real. But there's a million other things before you even get to that level. You know, you have students who have to help take care of a sibling. You have students who probably even have to take care of, you know, really needy pets right now. Mm-hmm. I definitely see toddlers in my classroom Zoom chats who are like there and they just don't have any option. They're just there.
Yeah.
You know, but I even think of the type of parent who will ask their student a question, you know, about some kind of fact, and then they'll go and like answer the question for the student or something, you know. I'm just thinking of like how you ensure best teaching practices. Like, you can't do that. There's a million distractions, a million ways for your attention to go off of something. And again, like, social emotional needs are not just helping out a student who's in a moment of acute crisis. There's lots of different aspects to like mental health right now that kids need addressed. And you know, it's just so hard right now because all of the different ways we've traditionally been able to reach out to those students are not available to us.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine like, I will think of a world in which we're all able to be out there again, that parents having had to try to teach their kids, I mean, I won't use the word empathy because it's not like, you know, they need a lesson, so to speak, but I could imagine there might be a very different dialogue between parents and educators after this is over and, you know, maybe almost like a closer relationship. I don't know. Do you foresee a change in the dialogue with the parents?
I don't know. I hope so.
I've seen a lot of my friends who are parents being like, I'm trying to homeschool my kid and I'm learning why I'm not a teacher. Thank you everyone who does this job for me. I've been really excited to see that because, you know, I feel like we can go underappreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just knowing that, you know, your students can hear this recording and, you know, read the transcript of our conversation. Is there anything that you would want to tell them or anything that you wish that they knew right now?
I think they're the best and I miss them. And I'm so bummed we didn't get to have our whole residency together. They're really cool.
Yeah, it's really the same. I mean, I have the benefit of I do get to see them just a little bit sometimes. And I'm like, if I could, you know, if this was like getting out there to some of the kids who I haven't been able to see already, you know, I would just want them to know, like, it's cool. Like, it's cool if you haven't been able to make it, you know?
Yeah.
Do what's best. If there's anything I can do, that would be amazing that I could offer you help right now. But otherwise, like, don't be down on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the things that are keeping each of you buoyant? Like, are you reading? Are you writing? Are there other things in your life that are the bright spots?
The silence is not meant to indicate a lack.
Awesome.
I think there are a lot of things for me. I've lived in a split coast kind of way for the past decade or so often. So I'm already used to connecting with people at a distance and having that feel and be good enough. So like still continuing to keep that up feels very good. I've been getting back into things that I loved when I was younger, but that I like revoked my permission to like for some stupid reason. So I've been playing a lot of video games, which makes me very happy.
Nice. What's your favorite?
I have been playing Pokemon Let's Go Eevee and realizing it's the same game I've been playing since I was in elementary school, and I'm still having just as good a time.
Yep. That's awesome.
And everyone's doing so many cool things. Like, all my friends are doing cool projects. Like, my friends who are like, I'm a touring musician. I can't tour. I'm going to make an album right now.
Yep.
And that's been really, really wonderful to see all my friends who are artists continuing to make art and continuing to share art with each other is pretty much the best.
Yes.
Yeah, fairly similar across a lot of that. I paint Dungeons and Dragons miniatures, so I've been getting a lot of that done.
really cool.
If you have one you can hold up.
Oh gosh.
Get the mantis.
It's a good thing I live in a studio, since I can just, like, reach anything in here from, like, where I'm sitting. Here's, like, a skeleton.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That's been...
Like, that's some detail work.
Why, thank you. and my wife and I are also avid bird watchers, and when it's really quiet outside, you can just stand under a tree, and you can get to know the voices of all the... you know, little hopping and fluttering creatures out there and really figure out who's who and who says what and where do they like to build their nests. That's been really great.
Yeah. I was surprised the other day we actually saw a bald eagle flying over Burien, which I've never seen before, and someone has a reflecting pond nearby, and we were walking by early one morning and a heron actually flew out. And I mean, again, we're in like suburbia.
Burien, the coastline of Burien is some pretty amazing intertidal ecosystem.
Yes.
So
yes.
There's the habitat to support that. I'm glad that you're seeing them.
It's true. Yeah, they're starting to come inland. It's unbelievable.
I've noticed that we do see, there's no traffic sound anymore where I live. Mm-hmm. It's so much quieter. And so I'm hearing things I couldn't hear before. Like, I live near Carkeek Park, and I was always able to hear the train whistle. But now, even though I'm well up the hill at the other far edge of the ravine, I can hear the train on the tracks now, and I can hear birds I couldn't hear before. And that's been a joy.
Sort of an awakening of the senses.
I think it's getting rid of the things that are... I think the senses are already awake. There were just so many other things dampening or drowning out what was already happening.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at it. We have about 2 minutes left. Is there anything else that you want to share as part of this interview? Maybe a final wish or any recommended reading. Is there any poetry that you would suggest that we tune into?
I'll always, anytime people are like, what should I read? I'm like, you should read Roske. Like, no matter what the situation, you should read Roske. Like, if you're happy, read Roske. If you're really sad, same thing.
Read Roske. Perfect.
I would say, like, kiddos and everyone else, whatever you're doing to get yourself through this is fine. Like, as long as you are not harming anyone else, like, whatever you do is a fine thing.
Yeah.
I think that's a great place to end it. Great. Thank you both. If I have follow-up questions, I'll just shoot them over by email.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Have a really good weekend.
You too, Ariella. It was very nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you as well, both.
Bye.
Bye.
Talk to you soon, Ari.
Talk to you soon.